Hello, and welcome to episode number 14 of the AFTV Newscast. This is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news and then follow up by answering some questions that have been submitted by you guys. You can watch live on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. or always catch the recorded version after the fact, either in audio podcast form or on YouTube in video form. I usually get it up sometime on Saturdays, usually. Today is November 6th when this is being recorded, and this week we'll got a bit of news. Gonna go over the latest 5.0.3.1 software update, and then go over some routing possibilities for the second gen Fire TV. So the tablet, this Fire tablet got routed, and then I'll let you guys know what that means as far as Fire TV routing goes. And then talk about the Fire TV back in stock and the game controller a little bit. And then of course we'll go into app news and deals, and then end up with answering a whole bunch of your questions, hopefully. Of course, if you're watching live, you can always tweet at AFTV News. You can tweet your questions live. I'll get to them once I get into the question section. If you got any feedback on what I'm talking about news-wise, you can go ahead and tweet that also. But let's go ahead and get right into the news. So the software update for the second generation Fire TV, version 5.0.3.1, started heading out about a week ago to devices, and now it's pretty much on all devices, I think. I don't think anybody's still waiting on it. And we got a bit of an idea from you guys submitting comments on what you found that have been fixed and whatnot. Amazon usually doesn't tell us what bug fixes have been fixed. They, you know, whenever it's a bug fix update, that's all they say is bug fixes and performance improvements, they say. And so from your feedback, they were able to gather kind of roughly what was fixed. And it's mostly seems like an audio and a remote slash game controller bug fix patch. So in this bug fix, it looks like we've got DTS audio and pass-through fixed for apps like Kodi and Plex and those sort of things. So big thanks to Chris Wolf and Edger R, who commented saying that DTS is now working with this update as well as pass-through capabilities with Kodi. Now, the other big issue that we've still had with the second generation Fire TV is Dolby Digital audio. Now, that's the older version of Dolby Digital, not Dolby Digital Plus. So Dolby Digital Plus was fixed in the 5.0.2.2 update, I believe. And then DTS was fixed in the 5.0.3 update a little bit, and then now we've got the pass-through fixed. But as far as Dolby Digital, it looks like some people are still having issues. Doesn't seem like it's everybody. So I got a comment from Papa and another comment from BBS who are saying that Dolby Digital is working for them, at least somewhat. You know, before they were just getting, I think BBS said before he was just getting buzzing, whereas now he's actually getting stereo audio when he has a Dolby Digital source. So it's close, but it's still not fixed. Vulcan195, Jay, and Ray have commented that Dolby Digital is not working with their older receivers that are not Dolby Digital Plus compliant. Vulcan195 has left a lot of nice good comments, and he basically says that he thinks if they just select, if they give you an option to select Dolby Digital instead of just Dolby Digital Plus or audio, it'll probably fix it there. But we haven't gotten that yet. So there are still some audio issues, but for the most part, most scenarios, audio seems to be working well on the second gen Fire TV. Now, Amazon has said that by November 30th, or really they've said on November 30th, that they'll be releasing an update that fixes Dolby Digital audio specifically. So we'll see when that comes. You know, we're still like 3 weeks away from that, but they've still got some time. Hopefully they'll push out another update before then that fixes Dolby Digital, you know, for everybody. Also included with this update are firmware updates for both the Fire TV voice remote and the game controller. These are the new ones that are Wi-Fi based, not the older Bluetooth based ones. You know, a lot of people were having disconnection issues with those remotes. They were saying that it would take, you know, they'd pick up the remote, it would push a button, it would take a few seconds for the Fire TV to kind of realize there was a connection and start working. I haven't experienced that issue myself. It's not everybody that's experiencing that. I have a feeling it has to do with your environment, because these remotes are Wi-Fi based. So depending on interference or what channel your router is set to, your Wi-Fi router is set to, I think that has, that contributes to the issues that people have been seeing. But these updates supposedly fix these issues. We don't know for sure, you know, because these issues have kind of been a bit sporadic. We can't say for sure, you know, it's not an easy thing to test whether they're fixed or not. But I do know, you know, I heard a couple weeks back from my source at Amazon telling me that they've got a whole team dedicated on making the remotes rock solid in these next few bug fixes. And so hopefully this is the one, you know, considering that it actually does update the remotes, I assume it is. So I expect that those remotes will be now rock solid. Definitely let me know in the comments either of this post or the YouTube video comments or post comments, whether you're still experiencing disconnection issues after receiving this 5.0.3.1 software update. Other than that, those are kind of the two big things that we know about this update. Again, it seems like Amazon is trying to push out these updates as soon as they kind of are ready for the public. They're not just waiting on one big massive update to fix everything all at once. So don't be too disappointed that this doesn't fix everything if you are having those double digital issues or maybe other issues. But hopefully we'll still get a few more updates before the end of the month, and that'll, you know, make the thing rock solid again. So earlier this week, the Fire tablet, the new $50, really cheap one that Amazon released just a few weeks ago, got rooted. And the reason that's kind of important for us here is because this tablet is kind of the first device from Amazon running Fire OS 5 that has been rooted. And so I took a really close look at what this rooting method does and how they achieved root, just to see if it can be applied to the either second generation Fire TV or, you know, all Fire TVs. And so I made this a pretty detailed post letting you guys know what's going on. Basically, what this rooting method does is it modifies the Fire tablet's boot image. And the boot image is basically what is the kernel on the RAM disk, and that's what basically sets up the entire disk drive OS upon boot. So it sets permissions specifically, and that's the most important aspect. So what they've done is they've taken the boot image from the Fire tablet, modified it, and then loaded it onto the Fire TV kind of temporarily, because using fast boot mode, which is kind of like a utility that lets you modify partitions and you know, things like that on these devices, on Android devices, it basically can temporarily boot from an image that you load remotely, not one that's already on the device. So they basically temporarily boot from this modified boot image. And what they've done in the boot image is modify how the system partition, which is basically all the OS, where all the OS lives, they've modified that partition to be writable. And so normally it's only a read-only partition so that you can't make any system changes, so that basically the device stays in a stable state. You can't basically mess up the device, you know, if you're not really messing with things. So by mounting that system partition as writable, it allows basically anybody to root the device. And so that's what they've done with the Fire tablet. Now, I looked into the second gen Fire TV and the first gen Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick. For first gen Fire TV and Fire TV Stick owners, this rooting method for the tablet does not apply, because the hardware on those older devices is completely locked down to where you cannot load a temporary boot image. Now, with the second gen Fire TV, oddly enough, it does seem to allow a temporary boot image. And that's kind of, if you're watching the video version, that's what this little terminal fast boot screen is. So when you do fast boot, and then the file boot image, boot.image, it basically sends it to the Fire TV, and then it says okay, and then reboots and tries to boot into it. Now on the older generation hardware, what it does is it tries to send it to the Fire TV, and then it reports the hardware is locked, and you know, it reports an error essentially and says the hardware is locked, so it does not reboot. So the fact that it actually is taking the image and rebooting seems to indicate that it's just like the Fire tablet, in that it will take a temporary boot image. The big question is whether it will take a custom boot image, because usually these boot images are signed, which means if you make any changes to them, the device will know and it will reject it. That's kind of how things were on the first generation. But since it seems the Fire tablet does not reject a custom modified boot image, that tablet is running Fire OS 5 and it also has a MediaTek chip just like this, our second gen Fire TV. So there's a good chance that the second gen Fire TV will also accept a modified boot image without actually, you know, checking the signature. Now, that's great, right? So why hasn't there been a root, you might be asking. The reason is we don't have the stock boot image from the second generation Fire TV. The Fire tablet has it because Amazon provides a manual download link for the software updates that you can install manually on those tablets. Amazon does not provide that same manual software update for the second generation or any Fire TV. The software updates we do get for the second generation Fire TV are incremental updates. You might have seen me talk about it in previous episodes of the podcast. So those incremental updates, they contain boot image patches. They don't contain the entire stock boot image. So without the stock boot image, we can't experiment and see whether it's going to accept a modified boot image. By it, I mean the second generation Fire TV. It's a waiting game right now. We don't have a stock boot image to use as a base for a modified version, or even just to test whether it'll accept the modified version. When I've tried sending it boot images, I tried sending it the first gen Fire TV boot image, which we have because that was not an incremental update. That was a complete update, so we could pull out that boot image. I tried sending that. I tried sending the developer preview boot image, you know, none of those are going to work because those hardware, the hardware on those older devices are different from the second generation Fire TV. So I knew those boot images were not going to work, but I just want to see if it would accept it. And you can't really tell whether it actually accepts it because those boot images are not compatible. So what it does is it takes it, tries to boot, I assume, and then just boots the default boot image that it has stored locally, you know, on the internal hard drive. Sorry, not the internal hard drive, the internal storage. Anyway, where we are right now is once we get a stock boot image somehow, we might be able to root the second generation Fire TV. We don't know yet. Best way to get the stock boot image, because it doesn't seem like Amazon is going to provide a complete update for the Fire TV, second generation Fire TV, only a patch, incremental updates. But the best way to get it is if somebody can take the second generation Fire TV and hardware root it. If you're not familiar with the hardware root method, it involves taking apart the device, soldering leads onto the memory chip of the Fire TV, and reading and writing to the memory chip using a computer. And so if somebody can root the second generation Fire TV using that hardware method, which nobody has yet, then they'll be able most likely to dump the boot image that's already on there. You have to have root access to be able to dump that root image. So that's our best bet right now, is just kind of wait and see whether, one, we get a full boot image from some update that comes out for the second generation Fire TV, or if somebody hardware roots it and is able to dump it. If you have a second generation Fire TV, once you're happy with kind of the stability of the device, you know, you're happy taking those updates, I would recommend blocking updates. I'll have a link in the show notes for how to do that, and wait, because who knows? We don't know if we'll ever get that boot image. We don't even know if it will accept the modified boot image, but if you want to root the device, you know, now would be a good time to wait, because Amazon could potentially block the Fire TV from accepting boot images at all, temporary boot images, that is. Moving on just briefly to the next piece of news is that the second generation Fire TV is back in stock. So is the second generation Fire TV Gaming Edition. Again, as I mentioned previously, that's really good news because it means that we're either really close to being completely free of all the bugs, you know, because Amazon is now starting to ship these devices again. If you haven't heard on either read from the website or heard on the podcast, one of the reasons these Fire TVs went out of stock was because Amazon was diverting the stock to their internal testing pool. And so it looks like they don't need that pool anymore, so they're not diverting the stock. And so I've gotten a word from a bunch of people saying they've gotten shipment notifications that their orders have started shipping for these devices that kind of were back ordered for nearly a month. So really good news that, you know, people can buy them again and that the, you know, software is stable. Next piece of news here is something I mentioned briefly in the last episode of the podcast, is that the Amazon Fire TV game controller actually has an accelerometer in it. And so if you're watching the video version here, you'll kind of see that there are little LED lights on the front of the remote when it's searching for a connection. And so if it can't find a connection with the Fire TV, those lights stop and it kind of goes dormant. And if you actually just move the Fire game controller, you know, just shake it a little without pressing any buttons, those lights will start to cycle again. So it actually is detecting motion. And so my assumption is that when it's sitting there idle, you know, when you're not using it, it actually kind of goes dormant and disconnects from the Fire TV to save battery. And then when you pick it up, before you even press a button, it can know that you're ready to use it, make a connection, and start working. The thing to keep in mind is if you have your game controller sitting somewhere that gets a lot of movement, either on a table that's kind of rickety or gets used a lot, because it doesn't take much motion to kind of trigger this reconnection, this research. If it's sitting on your desk, for example, you know, just typing on the keyboard could cause it to trigger. So basically, it's best to keep it stored somewhere that it doesn't get moved, it doesn't get vibrated too much. That way it isn't constantly trying to search and make a connection and draining your battery. So I think this might lead to why people are experiencing bad battery life from the game controller and even the Fire TV remote. So the first generation Fire TV voice remote also had an accelerometer chip in there. We never know for sure if it actually used the accelerometer, but we knew from it being taken apart that it did have an accelerometer, you know, chip basically. And so most likely the new remote does also. So it seems like, you know, moving these remotes around is enough to drain just a little bit of battery for the convenience of being ready to use. So you don't have to press a button and wait for it to make that connection. So just a little PSA letting you guys know. So last bit of Fire TV news before we get into apps and deals that have come up this week. The retailer Majer, I think it's pronounced. I'm not sure. It's not around in my area, so I'm not positive. But Majer has announced basically that they're going to sell the Fire TV stick, the non-voice version, for $24.99 on Black Friday, which is Friday, November 27th. So this is kind of the first news from Black Friday deals that we're hearing related to the Fire TV. I expect more to come out. Compared to other deals for the Fire TV stick, this is pretty good. This is pretty much as low as it's been. So when the Fire TV stick was very, you know, when it was first announced, Amazon offered it to Prime members at a $19 pre-order price. And so it's never been that low before, but on Prime Day, which was, I think, back in July, Amazon sold it for $24. And then more recently, we had Best Buy, Staples, B&H, those places. They also sold it for around $24, $25, $26. And so this deal is, you know, right up there. And this is probably where we're gonna see the Fire TV stick land. Compared to last year's deals, the Fire TV stick was just brand new when Black Friday came around, so we didn't see any Fire TV stick deals really. But the Fire TV dropped from, it, I believe, you know, it was $100 last year, this is the first generation, down to about $80 on Black Friday from Best Buy and Staples. And then on Cyber Monday, which is that Monday after Black Friday, Amazon themselves dropped the Fire TV down to $69, and that's the lowest it ever got. So that's kind of, you know, just to give you an idea, if you're looking for a Fire TV or a Fire TV stick deal this Black Friday, those are kind of the prices we're probably expected to see, you know, $24 roughly for the Fire TV stick, about $80 for the second generation Fire TV, you know, probably. That would be my guess. You know, as the month gets closer to Black Friday, we'll get a better idea of who's going to have what on sale. All right, moving on to new app news. So there have really only been a few new apps this week for the Fire TV, one of them being Remoter. So this is a game streaming app. So it will stream Windows PC games to the Fire TV and you'll let you play them remotely. What you do is you install their little streamer application on your Windows 7 or up PC and you launch the app on the Fire TV and you're able to basically play and control the game remotely. They claim that you can even do it outside of your home network through the internet if your connection is fast enough. I haven't been able to try this myself just yet, but it's similar to another app that used to be called LimeWire. Now it's called Moonlight. It's also a service that NVIDIA builds into their hardware themselves. So this is becoming kind of more popular these days, where being able to play your Windows PC games remotely through a cheaper device connected to your TV. And so if you have a Windows PC and you got a nice game collection, give this a shot. Let me know. It's a free app, it looks like. Everything is free. I didn't even see in-app purchases for it. But give it a shot. Let me know either in the comments here or in the comments of the post what you think and how it worked for you. Next up in app news, UFC released an official app for the Fire TV. Finally. It took a while. A lot of people have been waiting for this app. But the app is compatible with their Fight Pass subscription service. So you can pay $10 a month if you go month to month, or $9 a month if you subscribe to 6 months at a time, I believe. Or if you commit to a year, I believe it's only $8 a month. And that gives you access to kind of their back catalog of on-demand UFC fights and original programming. The app will also support buying their pay-per-view events for live viewing. But yeah, if you're a UFC fan out there, Give the app a shot. It's available on all Fire TV devices, including the Fire TV Stick. So great to see it finally come to the Fire TV. Last up in new apps this week for the Fire TV, Boingo TV released an app for all Fire TV devices also, including the Fire TV Stick. And Boingo TV is a military-only IPTV service. So you have to be in the military and you have to actually be on one of the bases. So I know it's probably a little limited for most of you, but I did want to mention it for those who are interested in this kind of service. But basically you can pay as low as $20 a month and they have a set of channels available. Channels like FX, National Geographic, Fox Sports, NFL channels, MLB channels. So a lot of the sports, a lot of guy stuff channels, essentially. It's kind of funny. Their lineup is very male oriented, which kind of makes sense since the military is mostly made up of males. So that's available. You can check it out, try out the service if you or you know somebody who's in the military. Moving on to app deals or deals in general related to the Fire TV. So it seems like Amazon is doing a kind of free app of the month, free Fire TV app of the month, that is, for paid apps. Last month we saw Boulder Dash become free and it was kind of like a special release app. And then this month, it looks like the free app of the month is Fibbage. I tried to reach out to Amazon's PR, but haven't heard back from them whether this is going to be a continued thing or something they're just trying right now. The Fibbage is a kind of family party game that you can play on Fire TVs or Fire TV Sticks. The app itself is free, but you have to unlock the app through an in-app purchase. And currently during the month of November, unlocking it is going to be completely free. Normally it's $6.99. So you can see here, if you're watching the video version, when you first load up the app, there'll be a kind of a big logo that says, you know, upgrade on the very front of the home screen. And you hit the menu button, I believe, and that'll pop up a little in-app purchase dialogue. And you can see the in-app purchase for the full upgrade is free. So definitely, if you are interested in this game, get it before November is over. And again, just buying it from the Amazon App Store is not enough. You have to actually install it and trigger the in-app purchase. And once you do that, it'll basically be free forever. You can uninstall it. And then if you reinstall it, Amazon will store the fact that you have that in-app purchase enabled. And so you'll always be able to upgrade the free app for the full version for free. Again, I'll have a link in the show notes to everything that I talk about, including links to these apps directly. All right, next up in app deals, Final Fantasy IV has dropped down from $15.99 down to $7.99. I mentioned this briefly in the last episode where Square Enix, the developers of Final Fantasy, are putting all four of their Fire TV Final Fantasy games on sale this month, kind of 1 week at a time. So last week we had Final Fantasy 3 on sale for $7.99. Now this week's Final Fantasy 4 on sale. And then next week it'll be Final Fantasy 5, followed by Final Fantasy 6 the following week. So if you're interested in the series, it's a great RPG, a role-playing game series. A lot of people love it, award-winning. You know, it's been out for a long time with a big following behind it. So if you're looking for a really in-depth, long game to play on the Fire TV, then check Final Fantasy IV out. All right, moving along to non-Fire TV specific news, but still Fire TV related. The Amazon Echo is on sale currently for $50 off. This is only the second time that the Echo has ever dropped below its regular price of $180. The other time was Prime Day for a really very short amount of time, and it was for the same price. So you have to use the Amazon store card to get this $50. But I've got a link in the description I'll put with instructions on how to do it. You have to enter the promo code Echo Deal. If you don't have a Amazon Prime card and you shop constantly on Amazon, I really highly recommend it because it gives you 5% off of anything you buy on Amazon, which is a really good deal. So highly recommend it. I love the Amazon Echo. I know a lot of people have been wanting me to talk more about the Amazon Echo on the site and in the podcast, which I plan to do soon, hopefully. I've got some ideas for some interesting articles coming out. So look for those. And if you're interested in getting the Amazon Echo on sale, get it while it lasts. The sale is for a limited time, they say, while supplies last. They haven't said exactly when it's going to expire. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this or watching this, it'll still be available for you. Last in the deal news, just very briefly, the Logitech K400 keyboard that everybody, including myself, kind of loves to use for the Fire TV is currently on sale for $19.97. It definitely is worth mentioning, mostly because Logitech has released a newer version called the K400 Plus that is not as good as this older one. So it's becoming harder to find the actual K400. And actually, it's actually the K400R that everybody likes and wants. And usually when you order it, even though it's listed as a K400, you're going to get the K400R because that's the revision. That's the newer version. I've got a link I'll include in the show notes and in this article of the differences between the K400 and the K400R and why you kind of want the K400R. You can see when once you get the box on the back, it'll say K400R, whereas on the front, it'll say K400. So it's really the same keyboard, but just a slight revision that kind of improves it, makes it a little better for the Fire TV. Definitely worth it if you've been thinking of getting a keyboard for the Fire TV. This is a great one. I will say that it uses a USB dongle, so it will not work on the Fire TV stick. It actually has to be plugged into the back of the Fire TV to work. If you have like a hard drive or external storage plugged into the back of the Fire TV, you can use a USB hub, a basic unpowered USB hub, to connect both this keyboard, for example, and like a flash drive or something. Yeah, definitely get this while it lasts. I know for a while this keyboard was going for more than retail because it was harder to find, but now I guess Amazon has some stock in it and has put it on sale. Check out the links in the show notes and get this keyboard if you're looking for one. I really highly recommend it. Right, I wanted to briefly talk about YouTube Red. I subscribed myself and I tested it on the Fire TV, and sure enough, on the YouTube app on the Fire TV, if you are subscribed to YouTube Red, it will recognize that and put up a little YouTube Red logo and cut out all ads. I talked more in depth about what YouTube Red offers in the last episode, but basically you get ad-free YouTube viewing, you get access to all of Google Music's kind of streaming music service that's like 30 million songs, and you also get on like smartphones, the YouTube apps, you can download videos for offline viewing and listen to videos in the background, and that's really good for like music on YouTube. And so you get all that for $9.99. It's a bit pricey. If you don't want the music aspect of it, really, you know, if you're just looking for the video aspect, just to remove ads, it's a bit pricey, but works pretty nicely. One nice thing I found about it is that video start up a lot quicker if you're a YouTube Red subscriber, because normally, even if there's no pre-roll ad for a video, what YouTube will do when you hit that play button is they need to check whether they have an ad to show you. That is, if you're not a YouTube Red subscriber. And so that'll take usually like a second or two just to figure out whether they're going to show you an ad or not. You know, and then of course, if they're going to show you an ad, it's going to be like a 5 to 30 second pre-roll ad. If you're a YouTube Red subscriber, video start up like very instantly. You know, it's kind of like the Fire TV interface itself, where once you hit play, it just starts playing. And you know, YouTube has really robust servers and a lot of bandwidth, and you know, they can pump out, I never realized that they can pump out these videos so quickly with no load times at all. And really, the load times that you're seeing before a video starts, it's usually just to figure out if they're going to show you an ad or not. So being a subscriber adds that one little perk. But yeah, up to you whether you want to subscribe or not. All right, moving on to the last topic before we get into answering your submitted questions. I wanted to briefly talk about the Apple TV. I've got it here myself. I got to play with it a little bit. Here, let's switch to full screen on the camera. I got the new Apple TV here. Just wanted to briefly talk about it, my thoughts initially. So quick comparison for you guys. It's actually, oddly enough, it's the same thickness as two Fire TVs. both first or second gen, because those are pretty much the same thickness. So, you know, seems a little bit thinner from the angle, but yeah, basically the same thickness, very heavy, you know, because I saw the iFixit guys took it apart and they found that it's basically just a big honking heatsink in there, because the CPU in there is pretty powerful, slightly more powerful than the second generation Fire TV, but there's really nothing to use that CPU power for anyway. You know, there's not much to see on the actual device itself. The remote, I think, is more of the issue. Here's the remote itself, and I brought some comparisons if you guys are interested in the size. So this is it compared to the Fire TV Stick non-voice remote. Here, that's a better shot of it, I think. Yeah, it's very thin, so, you know, much thinner than the Fire TV's remotes. And here's a shot next to the second generation voice remote, which is a little bit taller than the Fire TV first generation voice remote. So, oh, let me not show that. So there you go. If you look at the height, so you get an idea. Very tiny, very thin little remote, comparing the thickness of the two right there. You know, feels nice in the hand. Little small. I kind of, you know, I have larger hands, so I like the bigger Fire TV remote personally. A little harder to lose. I mean, this little thin thing fit between my couch cushions way too easily. You know, you don't want to set it down on the couch, you will lose it. And I think the screen is, or not screen, but the The surface is glass, so you definitely don't want to sit on this thing while it's under your couch cushions. So I'm not going to give like a full review, just a quick impressions. I'm not a big reviewer. I'm not going to review it officially on the site or anything like that. I will hopefully compare it later more in depth to the Fire TV. But for now, the device itself, the interface, there's not much that's that interesting. It's like an app interface. It's very similar in concept to the Fire TV, where you're hopping in and out of apps. So you've got built-in access to content through the iTunes store, just like you do on the Fire TV through the Amazon Instant Video store. So you can buy things and rent things there. There's no Apple subscription service yet. You can, install apps. They've got their app store. It was really weird because it's got Siri voice built into the remote, but I was having trouble myself getting it to, search for apps. I mean, you can launch apps that are installed with Siri, but like I was trying to search for CBS, for example, and I couldn't get that to show up. It just kept saying it doesn't have it, even though when I type in CBS, it works. But anyway, the real thing to talk about is the remote so much because it has that touchpad. You basically can, you can swipe up, down, left, right on the touchpad itself. The touchpad itself also clicks, and it can detect which area you're clicking on, top, bottom, left and right. So it'll kind of act as a D-pad that way, but not fully. Basically, you're swiping around most of the interface, and in places it's great, in places it's not. One example of where it's really, really awesome having a swipe interface instead of a D-pad interface is scrubbing through a video. So because it's kind of, it can see how fast you're swiping, whether it's a little bit of a swipe or a very quick swipe, you can very quickly basically swipe, through in very specific detail to any part of a video, much better than the Fire TV's interface where you kind of tap fast forward and tap it again to go a little faster, tap it again to go even faster. And a lot of times you go kind of too fast, then you hit play and you have to rewind a little bit. But on this one, basically, as you're swiping, you're basically controlling where the little, track bar is, and it shows you a little preview. And, once you get to where you want, you can start swiping very slowly and it'll start moving like, a few seconds at a time, and then you click and then it gets that section. So that's really where the swipe makes a lot of sense. Where the swipe does not make that much sense, in my opinion, is like long lists, because you end up just swiping and swiping and swiping your way. If you have a big library, Plex released their app for this. So I was playing with that a little bit. And if you've got a big library that you're swiping through, it just takes forever. I'd much rather be able to just tap a D-pad, like on the Fire TV remote, tap a D-pad, press it, hold it, and then zip through a list, in no time, instead of just swiping and swiping and swiping. You can, like I said, tap the sides, and that's kind of like tapping a D-pad. You can't tap and hold, oddly enough. Maybe they'll add that in an update, I don't know. Overall, if you're, I don't think a lot of you are going to drop your Fire TVs for the Apple TV, because it doesn't really offer much more, if anything, than the Fire TV does. If you're heavily invested in the iTunes app store, if you've bought movies or TV shows from there, then maybe it makes sense then to get an Apple TV over the Fire TV. But other than that, there's not much really there. One thing I will mention, here, let me bring that up. So one thing that's nice about the new Apple TV is the interface is kind of a lot more bubbly and interactive. It's a fun interface, because with the touchpad, you can kind of move around the icons. They have this kind of 3D parallax effect. It reminds me of the Fire Phone, actually. And one thing I found that was really interesting, a lot of you probably don't know this, is the Fire TV, if you're watching the video version, you can see a screenshot. Otherwise, I have a link in the show notes for this article that shows what the Fire TV's kind of initial interface design was. And it was very similar to what the Apple TV ended up going with. It was this 3D aspect to the icons for TV shows and movies. And so, text popped out and the characters were kind of separate from the background. It was really interesting what the Fire TV was possibly going to be. And you can see this kind of, there's a carousel here. And you can sort of see on the backside here, as you would flip through apps, that they would kind of swipe in this kind of 3D fashion, and then the rest of the interface still had this kind of bit more 3D aspect to it. And so This is what the Fire TV's original design was, but they ended up kind of flattening things out, simplifying things a lot. You know, whether, you know, that's better or not, it is, you know, on the Apple TV, it's a wow factor, but then you'll get over it. And then it kind of almost becomes annoying because when you want to swipe through something, you kind of have to swipe a little harder because when you first initially move your finger across the trackpad, you're going to basically be wobbling the icon. And then once you move far enough and hard enough, you'll go past the icon to the next icon. So I could see myself getting annoyed by it over time, where I'd probably just want to turn it off if possible. I actually never checked in the settings whether you could turn it off or not. But yeah, just thought it was interesting that the Fire TV kind of initially had this interface. It never launched with this interface. This was just a design concept when they were basically designing the interface. I found these online from the designer's own kind of portfolio website. But yeah, you can still see them on AFTV News and check them out. It's really interesting. Definitely a very, very nice, interesting interface that could have been for the Fire TV. All right, that'll do it for the Apple TV. If you've got any questions, leave them in the comments. I'll kind of looking into it a little deeper in depth later on. Maybe put up some comparison articles with it and the Fire TV. I mostly got it because I want to see what the kind of hacking modding community does with it. I know people have already been able to sideload apps onto it. If you compile the app and you it's really cumbersome process, but if you have a Mac, you can download Xcode, which is the development software for all iOS devices. And then if you download the source code of these apps, you can compile them yourselves and transfer them onto the device. So in a sense, you can sideload onto the Apple TV, and that's kind of what I'm most interested in. Supposedly there's a guy or a company, I don't know, Mr. Something, but basically it's a fork of Kodi that the guy says he supposedly got running onto the Apple TV and he's submitting to the Apple TV store. We'll see if that gets approved or not, but he says when he finds out, he's going to release the source. Eventually, you'll probably be able to put Kodi onto the Apple TV if you have a Mac and if you're willing to do the whole compiling thing. Definitely much more difficult than with the Fire TV, but it is an option. And I'm going to look into it, maybe write a little guy, a little article for those out there who want to give it a shot. That said, let's move on to questions. Every Thursday, I post up a topic asking people to submit their questions for me to answer here on the podcast. And like always, I'll usually answer most of the questions live, and I'll cut out some of the questions that I might not know the answers to or the redundant ones that I've answered before. If you really want to hear your answer, you'll want to watch live. But for the most part, I include all the good ones, so you're not missing out much if you're listening after the fact or watching on YouTube. All right, first question is from iChappers from Twitter. He says, does the Apple TV do audio over Bluetooth? Also, thanks for answering my last question. Much appreciated. Huh? You're welcome. And yes, the Apple TV does do audio over Bluetooth. You can connect the Bluetooth headset. It doesn't have any kind of audio jack in the remotes or anything. It'll also do audio over like AirPlay. So if you have an AirPlay device, there are a lot of AirPlay speakers. It can actually connect to those devices. The funny thing is when I was going into the audio settings, I actually have an AirPlay app on my Fire TV. So I actually played the audio of the Apple TV through the Fire TV, which was interesting, but it worked. I didn't check syncing wise too much. Again, I didn't spend too much time with it. I'm not that interested in using it day to day, really. I'm more interested in kind of just hacking it, modding it, seeing what I could do there. So iChappers asks, hi, could you tell me if there is any way to queuing a song using Amazon Prime Music on Amazon Fire TV? If there is not, do you think this feature will be added in the future? Thanks. So no, on the Fire TV's kind of music section, there is no way to queue music. You can start a playlist, you can start an album, you can start songs from a certain artist, but once a song is playing or once an album or playlist is playing, you cannot go add another song to be played next, unfortunately. But with the second generation Fire TV, Alexa capabilities, and soon with the first gen Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick, you'll have a little more control there because Alexa has an app on iPhones and Android phones where you can control the music that's being played through the Fire TV. So if you ask Alexa to start playing an album or a playlist or a Prime Station, for example, that's a really handy one, either a Prime playlist or a Prime Station, Alexa will show you all the songs that are going to come up next. So you can't select the one you want to play next, but you can tap and pick the one that will start playing immediately. So no, overall, you cannot queue a song, but with Alexa, you have a little bit more control. Hopefully they'll add that feature in the future. I don't know if it's going to be added or not. Next question from Fiery. He asks, is it worth getting an extra fast micro SD card for Fire TV 2? Will it be able to take advantage of a UHS speed class 3 card that's rated at 80 megabytes per second read? It's not that much worth it. You know, you don't want to get a super slow card. You definitely want to be in the 20, 30 megabyte per second read rates at least, I think. But it's not that much worth it because really the main part you're going to experience see a speed difference is when you're launching the app, because it has to read the app files from these are apps that are loaded onto the external storage, onto the micro SD card. But when the Fire TV launches those apps that are stored there, it has to pull them out of the card and into memory. But once the app is actually launched and loaded, it's sitting in memory, so you're not really going to see a speed difference even from a faster card. So if you're the type who's hopping from app to app, and you have a lot of apps and a lot of games that are installed on your micro SD card, maybe you'll see a difference because loading apps will be just a little bit quicker. But for the most part, you're not going to see that big of a difference. I say go with the micro SD card that's on the cheaper side. Don't overspend. I would much rather get a higher capacity card than a faster card if you're looking at those two as an option. So next question is from Ulysses Rodriguez. He's asking a lot about the 5.0.3.1 update. He actually asked this question before I made my post about that update, so I've answered a lot of the questions already. But basically, he's wondering if there are any changes in the update, specifically to the Wi-Fi remotes. Like I said, the big changes we know about are the few audio fixes that have been worked out, and the remote seems a little snappier, maybe connects a little bit better. Again, it's hard to really tell with the remote what's going on there, because the issues before were kind of sporadic. It wasn't just a constant, like, thing that you can test to see if it was fixed or not. You know, like with audio issues, you'll know immediately whether they're fixed or not. You just have to try it out. But with the remote, you kind of have to use it over a few weeks to see whether it is disconnecting or it feels a little better. I never really had any issues with the remote, so I can't really comment on whether this update has fixed them, because my remote was always pretty stable. Ulysses also asks about the LED on the front of the Fire TV 2 and how it acts differently from the first generation Fire TV. So for those who aren't aware, the LED on the front of the first gen Fire TV was always on, basically, no matter what. Whereas the Fire TV 2, the LED only turns on when you're actually pressing remote buttons. So it's kind of constantly flashing as you're using the remote. A lot of people are finding that annoying. I don't know if it's a bug or not. Amazon hasn't really fixed it in any of these patches. I don't think it's a bug. I think it's just how they plan to do it. I think some people were complaining about the LED being on all the time. You know, a lot of people don't like lights, you know, especially if you're watching a movie and you want everything to be pitch black and dark for that movie experience. So I know a lot of people complained that the light was always on and they wanted it off. So I think that's why on the second generation, Amazon decided to disable that light and only turn it on to kind of indicate that it has a remote connection. So I don't think they're going to change it back the other way, but it's basically you can't please everybody, because some people are going to like it one way, some people are going to like it the other way. Next question from Steve Klein. He says, what is your favorite streaming box and why? So my favorite streaming box is the Fire TV. That's why I run this site, basically, and that's why I started this site, because I think it is the best box. As to why, I think it's the most flexible. Each box has its own advantages. You know, I'm not a Amazon fanboy and stuck on Amazon. I do see the advantages of other boxes. So the Roku, I think, has the big advantage of having one of the best searches, because they're not focused on one content source. You know, they don't have their own Roku content library, so they have to have a good search so that you can find all the content from anywhere you want to get it. And Roku seems to have the best app selection as far as different sources, because you can get Amazon Video on Roku, or you can't get that on Android or Apple devices, but you can also get Netflix and you can get CBS, you can get everything. So Roku has that advantage. Apple TV has the advantage of working really well with Apple devices and the Apple ecosystem, of course. You know, it's kind of a nicer interface, you know, if you like that fanciness of it. And if you have an iPhone or an iPad, the AirPlay capabilities are almost enough to buy the device alone just for that. But if you're doing that, you'd be much better off getting the $69 last generation Apple TV, because it does AirPlay just as well as the new one. But yeah, for the Fire TV, I like it the best because I like Amazon services, so there's that big advantage there. I'm a Prime member and I watch a lot of Prime videos. I like their original content. It has now gained almost all of the services that are available, you know, HBO, Showtime. One of the big ones missing still is CBS. I really would like to see CBS onto the Fire TV. But for the most part, all of these boxes have almost all of the services now that you would want to watch content from. But the main reason I like the Fire TV is because it's Android based. So on top of it being from Amazon and having a really good, just solid ecosystem around it. You've got Android on the back end, and so you could do all of the side loading, all the modding. Kodi runs beautifully on the thing. I think it's still one of the best Kodi boxes for the price. So that's pretty much why I like the Fire TV. You know, there are a lot of other reasons I can get into details, but I won't go into those too much. Bean Counter CPA says, FYI, received the new Apple TV yesterday and will send it back tomorrow. Dolby Digital Plus does not work, just like when the Fire TV 2 generation came out. I spent a considerable amount of time with Apple support and they have had no clue about what the problem is. He suggested that I connect it directly to the television rather than the receiver. Hard to do with a projection TV that has no audio. That's hilarious. I guess thanks for letting us know, Bean Counter CPA. Yeah, the Roku even had audio issues. The Roku 4, when it came out, even had audio issues. I don't know if they fixed those yet. I saw it was getting like pretty bad reviews because people were complaining about audio. I think there's something with HDCP causing issues with the audio. Like, I don't know. All of these devices, these newer devices. So iChappers chimes in on Twitter asking, do you collect movies? And if so, do you buy digital or prefer a physical copy? It varies. You know, I've always kind of been a cord cutter. You know, I've never had my own cable subscription. When I had roommates, that was the last time I actually like subscribed to cable. So I always liked having my own library. And forever, you know, I had a home theater PC connected to my TV, and I would buy DVDs, rip them, and then have my whole collection, you know, at my fingertips. That's what I loved about the home theater PC. You know, I hated having just the clutter of like a shelf full of DVDs, and you have to go find the one you want, put it in the thing, wait for it to spin up, wait for the stupid FBI messages to pop up. You know, once I found out that you could rip those DVDs, store them digitally onto a hard drive, that was it. You know, I went that route. You know, I shoved all my DVDs into a box, you know, after ripping them, and never looked at them since. They're still in the attic, you know, and I've still got the digital copies. So yes, I do have a digital library. These days, I do a lot more renting. Well, I do a lot more streaming, you know, with Netflix and with Amazon. A lot of the content is available through there, so I don't buy Blu-rays and DVDs as often. That's why I use Kodi, is to access my digital ripped library, essentially. But these days, I do a lot of streaming mostly. That's how I watch most of my content. I do purchase occasionally. I do rent a lot. You know, I like Amazon's little, you know, $2.99, $3.99 rental of something new that came out. Because usually you can kind of tell ahead of time whether you're going to want to own something to rewatch it, or whether it's just going to be like a one-off, just watch it type of thing. What I would love is for a service, you know, either like Amazon or Apple, after you've finished watching a rental, to offer you like a one-time upgrade offer to like turn the rental into ownership. That's kind of the service I'd always want, is so I would just basically rent everything. And then if I ended up really liking it and think I want to own it and rewatch it later, then I would, you know, pay the extra, whatever it is, $10, you know, on top of the rental fee to rewatch it. So yeah, I'd really love that kind of service. Nobody's ever done it. I mean, it has to do with the rights that you get, you know, these services get different rights for renting videos than they do for selling videos, and so the two can't really mishmash. But that's my ideal service. If some service comes out like that, I'd probably buy a lot of my content through there, because you know, there's a lot of times when you rent something and then you figure out, oh, I wish I bought it instead of renting it. iChappers has a second part to his question. He asks, if digital, do you worry about losing access to your movies in the future? I definitely do. That's probably the biggest reason I'm hesitant to buy just digital content, because not losing access, I don't worry about that, because I mean, I don't buy from like new companies or anything. I buy from Amazon most, you know, pretty much exclusively, and I don't think Amazon's going anywhere, so I think I'll always have access to that content. But it's transitioning to a different device that might be the issue. Is, you know, if down the line Apple creates a really good streaming box, or Roku does, or Google does, and I switch over, then I won't have access to that Amazon stuff potentially, because of the whole everybody, you know, bashing heads and nobody working together and everybody basically locking down their ecosystem. You know, that's partially why I never really got into the whole Apple TV, is because Apple's iTunes is really DRM locked, and you cannot watch that on anything other than an Apple device, period. You're not gonna watch that on Roku's or Fire TVs or Google, anything. So that's why I never really bought anything from Apple. Amazon's a little more flexible. You can watch it on a lot more devices. So that's why I was kind of leaning more into that. But yeah, no, it's definitely a concern, and it keeps me from buying digital content. Next question is from Anthony. He says, can you connect a PC to Amazon Fire TV via Wi-Fi Direct? Say if you have no internet connection, but have files on PC you want to stream. No, you cannot connect directly via Wi-Fi Direct. I know the second generation Fire TV, it kind of has like this little access point that it appears to have. Like if you do a scan of your Wi-Fi, you'll see the Fire TV is actually emitting a Wi-Fi signal. And that's pretty much so that it connects to the remotes, but that's not the same Wi-Fi that you would connect a PC to, for example. So no, you cannot connect directly. But to kind of achieve what you want, to basically stream content to the Fire TV without an internet connection, there are these little devices. They're kind of like portable routers, essentially. And you can basically create your own little network, Wi-Fi network, with these little devices. So I brought up here, if you're watching the video version of this, for those watching the audio version, basically it's a Hutu wireless travel router, $20 on Amazon. It's this tiny little device, but basically, you know, when you power it on, it creates a little Wi-Fi network, and you can connect the Fire TV to it, you can connect a PC to it, and they'll be able to see each other and talk over a little network. So if you want to do kind of direct streaming from a PC to a Fire TV without internet connection, this device is kind of the only way. And I think it even has like a USB port, and you can plug in a hard drive or a flash drive that has files, and you can actually, you don't even need a PC. You could just use this to stream the files over to the Fire TV. Haven't tried it myself, but I've read the reviews a little bit. I was interested in buying this at one point, and it seems like it has those capabilities. So that's really the only way, Anthony, we can kind of achieve what you want. You can't really just directly connect the Fire TV to a PC through Wi-Fi. Next question is from ShowerURU90R. All right, he says, is it possible to enable Alt-Tab functionality? It used to work when I first got my Fire TV. That's true. It's not possible. I've looked into it myself, trying to see if there's a way back when it was removed. Essentially, it was removed when they added the little shortcut menu. When you hold the home button on the Fire TV remote, it causes that little shortcut menu that shows the time, and it shows settings, and it shows sleep, and it shows mirroring options. So when they added that menu, it got rid of Alt Tab. I have a feeling they're using the Alt Tab mechanism to trigger that menu, because they kind of both showed up at the same time. For those who don't know, on older versions of the Fire TV operating system, if you had a keyboard connected, you could press Alt Tab, similar to how you could do on a Mac or a Windows PC, and basically tab through your recently opened applications, you know, just like kind of on an Android device. And so Fire TV got rid of that. It was kind of a feature that shouldn't have really been there in the first place. It was like a leftover thing from the fact that it had Android in the background. There was no way to trigger it with the remote or anything official. It's not surprising they got rid of it, but yeah, there's no way to trigger it. Sorry about that. Next question from Nick. He says, my select button has stopped working in XBMC Gotham. I can't get to Amazon TV screen because it auto-loads into XBMC. He says, I need to figure out a way to kill XBMC and restore back to a previous point, but how do I get out of it? So it sounds like he has his Fire TV set up to auto-launch into XBMC. It's probably a rooted device, I'm guessing. I'll put a link in the show notes to two guides that could help you out. So I really hope that you have ADB enabled, because if you have ADB enabled, then you can load the settings menu directly. You know, even with Fire TV still loaded, it will load the settings menu on top of Fire TV kind of as a pop-up. And so from there, you'll be able to get into the apps, and you'll be able to kill or reset XBMC. And then you can go in and fix things that way. So check the show notes for the two guides. One will show you how to load the settings menu with ADB, and the other will show you how to load the apps manager menu with ADB directly. So with either one of those two, you'll be able to basically get into the settings section, even though XBMC is kind of dominant, taking control of things. Next question from Adam. He says, hi, IOS. Thanks for the great site and information. Now that the dust has settled a little, do we have any more information on just how this buggy launch was even able to happen? Was it a project leader issue? I saw your report about Netflix's app team changing things up in a way that broke surround sound on the AFTV2. And I can definitely see that happening. But even that would require someone to give the okay to release the product. I mean, sure, they got the product out before Apple TV, but in the meantime, Amazon had to endure weeks of their big 2015 product being in hundreds of reviews by their most loyal customers. This wasn't first day bugs. This was an inaugural botched product launch. How many sales went to Roku and Apple TV because of what potential buyers saw in the weeks after the launch? Amazon's reputation is not that of an employer that is particularly indulgent of mistakes like this. Really good questions. I wish I had the answers to all these questions. What I have been told through some sources at Amazon is that there were some director changes. So yeah, there were some leadership changes. And so that resulted in the quality kind of diminishing on the product. They definitely did give the go ahead for the device to launch, you know, with the DTS Dolby Digital Plus issues that they knew about, but I don't think they knew about all the other issues, the remote connectivity, the Dolby Digital not working, that sort of stuff. I wish I knew more, but I don't. I'm sure there are going to be some changes, or there have already probably been some changes. I haven't heard about it. I don't really ask about those sort of things. Vulcan195 asks, any insight into whether they will include Netflix in Universal Search? Except for Netflix, AFTV2 does pull up matches from services providers like Stars, Encore, Hulu, HBO, and Showtime. I've addressed this before. I'll include a link to an article I wrote specifically about this. It's up to Netflix. Amazon provides a way to include content like Netflix into Universal Search, but I haven't heard any news on whether it's coming or not. I think Amazon wants it to come, but Netflix seems like they don't want it to come. I think they don't want the Fire TV to be any more popular than it is. I think Netflix likes all the different boxes kind of being level, and so adding Universal Search to the Fire TV kind of gives it a little bit of a more advantage. It's kind of one of the features it doesn't have. Yeah, I haven't heard anything new, but check out the article that I'll link in the show notes for why I think that's the case. All right, next question from Lewis. He kind of follows up on something he asked last episode. He was asking if I can post the full version of the podcast unedited instead of kind of cutting out the questions that I don't go through. I decided not to do that. One, mainly because there were some audio syncing issues, so it would involve a lot more work on my part to sync the audio on the kind of unedited version. You know, I can't just put it up. And for the most part, the questions that I cut out are the ones that I either have no answer to because I'm not familiar with it, or, you know, the ones that are asking specifically about a specific app that I don't know about. So you're not really missing much out of the unedited version, you know? So yeah, I'm probably not going to put those up just because it's not really going to be a good experience. And it's going to be more work for me. And it already takes me long enough to edit the edited version. I don't want to do even more work on the kind of cutout version. Lewis also asks, as you've mentioned before, I fully agree with you that all the third-party add-ons on Kodi shouldn't be used. Nowadays, you can basically get everything online for reasonable prices except for some live events. I use HBO Now and Amazon with Smart DNS. I don't feel this is pirating because I pay for the content. What is your opinion? Also, he asks, are you as excited as me about the upcoming new show, The Man in the High Castle? Thanks a bunch, always. It's not all third-party add-ons for Kodi that are bad. It's just the pirated ones. Kodi has some decent add-ons. I don't use really many of them myself. I haven't really investigated them, but they do have a big add-on library that has some good stuff that isn't pirating. So don't just count out all of Kodi's add-ons. Like I've said in the past, I don't think you should be using those free streaming pirated add-ons, because it's basically just like downloading the stuff off torrents, just an easier interface. As far as using DNS services, personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you're paying for the content, even if it's not available in your area, if you're still paying the full price, the whole geographic restriction thing, I think it's a leftover thing from before the internet and when you had like DVDs were geographically restricted because they wanted to control the pricing in different regions. Like Australia, for example, always gets shafted on prices. You know, something that we pay basically $100 for is like $200 for them, you know, equivalent, you know, once you do the conversion. And so I think what they do is they try to factor in, you know, with physical content, the fact that it costs them more to get content physically to other areas, other countries. So that's why you have geographic regions and restrictions. So they want to price things differently. But when you're talking about digital media over the internet, I don't see how it could be any different for somebody streaming it from one location to another. So yeah, in my opinion, what it comes down to is ethics, really. If you feel comfortable and that you're giving back enough, then, you know, go for it. A lot of these laws are not really caught up to the modern day and age with streaming. So I don't see anything wrong with using Smart DNS, even though it's technically breaking laws and illegal. As for The Man in the High Castle, yeah, I'm really excited. A lot of good shows coming out from Amazon. Man in the High Castle is coming out November 20th, I think. That sounds like it's going to be a really good show. Definitely look forward to watching that. Mad Dogs is another new Amazon series that I'm looking forward to. The Jeremy Clarkson, you know, Top Gear kind of reboot thing that's going to come out. That's, you know, not going to be for a while, but I'm definitely looking forward to that. So definitely a lot of good content coming out of Amazon. So next questions are from Eric, who's asking, when is Amazon going to basically finish fixing all of the issues with the second generation Fire TV? And he says, make it as smooth as the Fire TV 1. I don't have a definitive answer to that, and unfortunately, they're getting pretty close. The last few software updates, we've had, three in the last month or so, have stabilized the box pretty well. There are only a few issues left that I've seen. I'm not even experiencing all of those issues myself, since it's kind of dependent on the stereo kind of AV receiver that you're running and TV that you're running with the audio issues, for example. But it seems like end of November is kind of their cutoff. You know, when these issues first started, the first thing that they issued out was this official little statement saying that they plan to have Dolby Digital fixed by November 30th. And I think that was kind of them saying that we'll have all of these issues fixed by November 30th. Because at the time, this was like mid-October-ish when they issued that. So it kind of gave them a month and a half. And so it seems like that's roughly the date. So I say, if you're willing to, give the Fire TV 2 a shot until end of November. If December comes and there are still issues with the box, then I think you have every right to remain angry and just dump the Fire TV, because by then Amazon should definitely have all of the issues fixed. I think it's getting pretty stable. I like the Fire TV 2 right now. I'm using it as my main Fire TV. I'm not having issues. So, yeah. Next question is from Tim. He says, "Hey, Elias, I noticed you have made note of the sale on the Logitech K400 keyboard mouse combo on the site today. This keyboard has worked wonderfully for me so far, but my only complaint with it on my AFTV 2 is that it inexplicitly does not work inside of the YouTube app. While the arrow keys and mouse function correctly, when I go to the search area, for instance, I cannot type in any letters. I am able to type without issue in essentially every other app I have sideloaded. Do you have any ideas why this might be the case?" Yeah, I've experienced that myself too, Tim. It's not an issue with yourself, or it's not even an issue with the Fire TV 2. This is it's the same case on the Fire TV 1. For whatever reason, the searchability on the YouTube app does not accept keyboard input. It's not actually that it doesn't accept the keyboard altogether, because the YouTube app actually has a feature where if you press the S button on the keyboard, it will launch the search UI for the YouTube app. And so it is detecting the keyboard, the letters, but for whatever reason, it doesn't allow typing. I have a feeling that's because it is not using the default on-screen keyboard for the Amazon Fire TV. Now, not every app uses the on-screen keyboard, and there are apps like Kodi, for example, who does not use the default Fire TV on-screen keyboard, but it still works typing with a keyboard. But yeah, I would contact Google, submit a little like bug report to YouTube and say how it doesn't work. Yeah, unfortunately, there's no way to fix it, but know that it's not just you. It's not just the Fire TV 2. It's just, that's just how that YouTube app is. Vulcan195 asks, "Is Amazon planning to allow apps to use the voice search feature? A lot of apps offer a keyboard interface. It would be great if Amazon would allow voice input in lieu of pecking with a remote for doing a YouTube search." Funny enough you ask. That would be great. I haven't heard anything at all. I don't think that's going to be coming anytime soon. For that voice feature to work, what it does is it records the voice, sends it over to Amazon servers, and then sends back text version or for what the app to do. So they would have to actually create an entire new API for that to work. It does not support it in any way right now. So it's not even like their in-house apps use some API that they're not allowing other apps to use. It's just something that's caked into the OS itself. So I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon, unfortunately. All right, that'll be the end of the 14th episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed watching, if you're on YouTube, please hit that like button, subscribe to my YouTube channel. I like to post videos here and there. I've got some ideas coming up for future videos, so subscribing is kind of the best way to support the channel there. If you're subscribed through the RSS feed or through iTunes, please leave a review, say on iTunes. I'll be in the Google Play podcast store soon, whenever that launches. I've submitted there, so you'll find me there. Also, again, would love reviews there. If you got any questions, any comments, any feedback, leave them in the comments either on YouTube or on the post that's going to go up. You know, I'm Elias. I run AFTVnews.com. Really thanks for watching. I really appreciate those who watch live. I stream every Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. The edited version goes up the next day, usually on Saturday, both in audio format and on YouTube. So love if you guys can watch in any way. Thanks a lot. See you guys next week.